All right, welcome back to another episode of the Badass Lifter podcast. Today I'm here with Luis Green. Luis Green is a coach, educator, and author for and about body equality and size inclusivity. She has been advocating for both of these since 2007 and helps people of all bodies become stronger and healthier with her Size Strong program. Luis, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I've been following you for a while now. Also, I would say you have one of the longer careers that I've seen online, because 2007 would be before social media became a big thing. I feel like a lot of people jumped on kind of when that started. But 2007 is going to be like, you know, what did that look like at the time? Like, I would love to tell you, like, how would you get into this? What did that kind of movement look like at that time? And like, kind of how has it changed as the years have gone on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I wasn't operating an online business at that time. I still had a flip phone.
Nice.
But I opened a fitness business in Canada called Body Exchange, which was a plus size boot camp. And we ended up kind of moving out into Western Canada and having these small locations of fitness boot camps where people in larger bodies came to exercise together. And at that time, there was Curves, which was at the height of its franchise. And so it was very, popular in that regard. And that kind of insinuated and implied that it was for all body types. It didn't specifically say that. But you're right, as far as social media goes, it was very limited. People were just getting going in Facebook. There was no Instagram or TikTok. So it really, like, looking for that representation of people in larger bodies moving was so very limited, because we were looking still to the magazine rack, which right. wasn't happening. And people weren't really creating their own channels on social media at that time.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must be like a very, because I only really started, I've been a trainer for 8 years now. And so social media was very much still a thing, obviously very different than what it is now. But like, I'm so curious, like, what got you into that space in the first place? Because of the people I talk to, how they get into the space is they find someone who is like a body equality, haze, body positivity advocate, and that kind of gets them into that space. But they find them like on YouTube or Instagram. Like, what got you interested in the space without social media? Like, what inspired that?
I think it was, the catalyst for me was, you know, a decade of dieting and to no avail, just always hungry, always white knuckling it, always doing the on again, off again fitness routine, going as hard as possible, burning myself out, like very kind of in a disordered kind of way. And I remember joining this run club, and, you know, it was another attempt to lose weight and be lean. And my run coach was in a larger body, and she wasn't necessarily proclaiming that I'm body positive or I'm, you know, I'm about health at every size, but she just had this larger body. And at the same time, never talked about calorie expenditure, never even acknowledged that her body was bigger or anyone else's body was bigger. She just trained us like athletes.
She was just there doing her thing.
She was just there doing her thing, you know, like, and I was so taken back by this. I was like, what is going on here? Like, you're larger, you're athletic, you're in fitness leadership, and you're not trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
Like, it just was the first time it was like,
yeah, because I think a lot of people, I know when I talk about my job offline to people, and I tell them I don't work in weight loss, that a lot of people are like, what do you even do? Like, what is your job? And that's like, and that's now in 2024.
Yeah.
But and again, in 2007, like, obviously, like, this was not a, people at least know about the movement now. Obviously, there's a lot of questions still, but like at that point, like, people didn't even know what health at every size was, even though it existed. And it's cool that you had someone who, like, they weren't like a huge app. It's not like they were like at every, like every session was like about body inclusivity. They were just a person doing their thing that happened to be in a larger body. And I guess that kind of showed that, like, hey, you don't need to be a size double small to do this or to be in this space, right, or like be athletic, which I think is really valuable, because I think that's still something that people struggle with now. And something I want to talk to you about today, because we want fitness to be more inclusive, include more people. I have a big goal myself. Like, I want everyone lifting weights of all like ages and looks. And like, that's like a big like mission of mine. What's like something that you noticed really helped people get into that space when you first started? Like, what's the, cause you, it sounds like you were focusing more like exclusively on plus size people. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like exclusively, like
that's where I have started and remained for 17 years. Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, for those who are plus size trying to get into fitness, but they're finding they can't find their space, like how, what would you recommend to help them get into the space in the first place?
What, I mean, really what the game changer for me was is removing that anti-fatness from the model, because I just, it just gave me the mental real estate to show up to be an athlete. If I was constantly in that space of, if I run this far, I expend this, then I can eat this. And like, I was constantly doing debits and credits and constantly using exercise as this tool to kind of purge calories. It just gave me that mental space to show up and be athletic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was at that time that my athleticism really took off. I mean, at that time I was into more endurance, but, it just went from that beginner 5K clinic to half marathons and triathlons and 250 kilometer cycle events. And I mean, it just went crazy because I was no longer fighting my body. I was in this space of, you know, seeing what my body could do and building it up rather than stripping it down. And I think that that's really where the industry is getting it wrong, is as long as we're promoting this anti-fatness model, for one, it's so triggering for so many people just because they've had this, you know, weight cycling experience. And not to mention all the fatness and weight bias people face in those spaces. But if we can alleviate all of that and just say, show up and be an athlete, then it's an absolute game changer. So to your point, I would recommend that people look for those spaces that are calling themselves size inclusive, health at every size, body equality, whatever the language is, fat acceptance, whatever the language is for the space, look for that, those words, those keywords, and make sure that the organization can back it up.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I want to ask you as well, is that like, because I think a lot of gyms now are talking about being more inclusive. I've definitely noticed that messaging has shifted, which is good. I like that. Like, I want them to be. What are things that like gyms could actually like for people, for organizations that don't specialize in like just body inclusivity specifically, like take like Good Life, which is like a common gym in Canada. What could they do to be more inclusive to plus size people and make them feel more welcome in that space?
I have been talking with Good Life. So I think what, let's just say in general, any chain gym could do.
Well, yeah, if you have contracts with Good Life, we can make pick a random gym or like, whatever, you know, it doesn't have to be like specifically behind the scenes what you're doing with, you know, whatever, you know, any gym. Like any commercial gym.
Any commercial gym really needs to look at how they present. So what does your website look like? Because I have done surveys of the top 10 chain gyms in North America, and I was able to find two larger bodied people on 10 national, sometimes international sites, right?
Right.
So representation is key. So what we started to see is when we talk about representation, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is you start to see more inclusion of race, which is very important. But we are still not seeing a lot of inclusion of visual larger bodies. So what we need to understand is that's the unspoken invitation for somebody in a larger body to look at the website and think, hey, there are people that are going to be there that look like me. That's going to make me feel safer. The problem is what a lot of fitness and sport brands think is that if they put larger bodied people on their site, it implies that their services don't work.
Right. Yeah, because I think that's like fair, because I think in the online space, it can be very easy to think like, well, yeah, isn't everyone on this path? And there are, and there has been, like, even in the time that I've been online, there has been improvements. But, you know, in the general population, most people have like a weight loss appearance goal. Like that's kind of the, like, and not just, and then so if you put images of people who are plus size, I think for those people, they could be like, oh, well, like this doesn't even like work. Like I'm looking for the person to look like a size like double smaller, like, you know, not plus size people, which, you know, I think we almost need to change from like a society standpoint what we expect from fitness for that to work, right? Like
it's definitely a cultural situation where we are so ingrained to believe that fitness and exercise in general is part and parcel with having a certain look.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally agree. I mean, I used to be, I would say, like more the traditional athletic look at one point. Like had abs, the whole thing, got like a lot of social credibility. Don't have that now. And even that, like, even though I've gained more knowledge in that time, I somehow like lost credibility in the public space and have had to like, now, like, luckily I work online and can show people like know what I'm talking about and all that, but most people don't have that, right? Most people don't have like an Instagram following or like a place to prove that they know what they're talking about. And a lot of people do judge based on like, well, what does this person look like? I remember I was part of a dodgeball league, and there was two trainers on the team and like a bodybuilder person, and everyone went to the bodybuilder for like nutrition and health advice, despite her like not even being a trainer. Like, and that's not her fault, but like, I just like, we definitely judge people based on like, okay, what is a fit look? Okay, this person is fit, therefore they must know more than like the average person. And I think that's something that we need to change. Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely not the situation. And that's why, you know, that's one of the reasons why right out of the gate of getting certified, I started my own business, because I literally wasn't employable.
I've heard this concern before, right? I like many plus size trainers, like they just want to work at a commercial gym. They got the certifications, they've trained before, and like just can't get hired. Like, yeah. It's a huge, like, or if they do get hired, they'll get like lower rates because they're seen as like a lesser qualified trainer, even with like the same credentials, I've also heard as well. And I think gyms are really missing out on this, because I have met a lot of people who don't want their trainer to look like a bodybuilder. Like, truly, like, even if we just talk about what makes the gym the most money, if we have people who don't have like the superhero bodybuilder look, I actually think that there's people who would prefer that as a trainer, who like find that less intimidating. They think like the training is going to be more enjoyable. Like, not everyone wants to have shredded abs year round. Like, to me, I just feel like having trainers like that would be better for both the people who are looking for trainers, as well as like the business itself. Like, it just seems like a win-win to me.
Well, you know, for a lot of personal trainers, it's difficult for them to make a full-time career out of it. And I've been doing this full-time very successfully for 17 years. And I think that that speaks to the need and the want and the demand for people to have diversity in their leadership. And I'm not saying every trainer and every client wants to have a body equality, size inclusive person, you know, in their leadership, but there's certainly a lot of room for a lot more of us.
Yeah, no, yeah, it at least should like exist, or like, I think a weight neutral offer would at least, like, one thing I've advocated for is if you're like, if you take an assessment for a trainer, that you just have like optional weigh-ins. Like, just as like, hey, you don't want to do this? Like, no worries. Like, we have other metrics we can use. Like, to be honest, for making your program, it doesn't really, like, I haven't asked anybody their weight in like 4 or 5 years now, and we've made programs, people have gotten stronger and healthier. Like, it's not like a data point that we necessarily need. The only exception I have for that is powerlifters, because we kind of need to know what weight class they're in. But, you know, I think that, like, as a small step, I think just like, hey, like, you don't want to do a weigh-in, all good. Like, we can assess you in different ways. I think that alone would be like a big first step for major commercial gyms to work on.
Yeah. I do have problems with weigh-ins, if I can be so frank, because...
Be the most, you know, frank, Luis. Let us know what's up. Let us...
Frank is my middle name.
Yeah.
I have a problem with a weigh-in because, you know, unless you've got some certifications with nutrition, nobody's losing weight from exercise alone. I mean, unless they're excessively exercising. And I feel like weighing people is out of the scope of practice.
For trainers?
For trainers.
Yeah, I think the question is always like, what are you going to do with that information? Because like, whether someone's like 150 or 250 or 350, I don't think it changes a lot of the exercise dynamics. The one thing it might change is that like certain machines have like weight limits, which like, or like seat sizes are a big issue as well. Like I've seen leg presses with like really small seats and like, so, yeah. Like, but that even be with like something you would need, like, I don't need your exact weight to like figure that out kind of thing.
No.
Like, yeah. And I think you're right on the, like when we look at exercise and its effectiveness on weight loss, it's pretty bad. Like across the board, like, just in general, it seems to be the research I've read, feel free to share if you've seen something different, is that like, it's not bad for like weight maintenance terms of like weight loss, it seems to have like either like no effect or you have to work really hard to get like any effect at all.
Yeah.
So that's like, that's the research that I've seen in that way.
That's exactly what my point is as well. And I think exercise is great if you're looking for fat loss in conjunction with a nutrition plan but you know, then we're going to get into probably a restrictive eating talk, which is a whole episode.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But I feel like as fitness professionals, we should be focusing on the fitness. And you're right. There are some cases where if I'm going to have somebody on a TRX and I'm unsure if they're over 300 pounds, then maybe I do need to weigh them. But I think you can eye that up with your expertise a little bit and just be like, their weight's questionable. I'm not sure if I'm not going to put them on a TRX.
Yeah.
You know, with larger bodies, there's other things that you need to consider as far as range of motion and spatial differences, you know, particularly when you're doing like hinging exercises, but we don't need to know people's weight for that. So I feel like when we're weighing people, I'm very sensitive to the fact that a lot of people in larger bodies have gone through many, many, many weigh-ins.
Right.
That have caused them nothing but either the same weight or they're heavier as a result because of this cycle effect, right? So when we are weighing people at a gym, when exercise alone is really likely not going to get them lighter, if that was their goal in the first place, you're kind of keeping those people in that cycle.
Yeah, I agree. I think like one of the things that we've really messed up is like the promise of exercise to make people lose weight, I think is like kind of like what you mentioned, is just like very ineffective. And then like, what is the value of the weigh-in at that point?
Yes.
And you know, kind of a bigger mission that I have as well is that like increasing people's value in themselves beyond the number, because there just are a lot of people where like stepping on the scale is like a measurement of their self-worth.
Totally.
And I kind of want to get people to the place where like, even if you don't like what you weigh, we should still care about yourself beyond that number. Like you are still a person who like is much more interesting beyond like whether you hit 290 on the scale or like whatever that is. And I don't think you don't want to be treated. You don't treat others like that, or I'm assuming, hopefully you don't. So you wouldn't want yourself to be treated as like, oh, well, I'm a person at 300 pounds. This means I am this or this or this, or like it's an unfair characterization of yourself off of like a data point that doesn't really tell me anything about you. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's a data point, but it's also kind of a cultural point as well, like, mm-hmm. Oh, you're a 300 pound person. Like there's not really a lot of positive messages in our society around being a 300 pound person. And I'm not saying that it's a negative thing, but the messages that our culture puts forth for people that are in you know, a certain look or size is not usually very positive. So again, I wonder when we get people on a scale in public settings, particularly, what are we doing that for?
Yeah. What is the value of that number in that situation? Yeah. I think is like very, like, what does that actually tell you? And again, like, I've been training people online for 5 years now. I don't take weigh-ins. I don't take body measurements like before now. Like, I don't do any of that.
Yeah.
And it's been fine. People are getting stronger. Like, it hasn't been like, yeah, how could I possibly train this person without that number? And the longer that I train, the more I'm like, what do we really need this number for? Is like very, very little. Again, with the exception of like people in powerlifting and stuff like that, because then they
exactly,
yeah.
I mean, sometimes you need to know weight. And I, like, I'll be frank. I was weighing and measuring all my clients when I first started. I was doing it, and you know, I was realizing over time, because I was working with specifically people in larger bodies for such a long time, that I was noticing that it was doing more harm than good.
Yeah, and also I think like I've heard, because I've debated this online with TikTok people, which has been a fun experience. But one of the things is that they say like, well, they need to be like, we need to realize where they're at, or like be upfront with their situation. And I'm like, first of all, plus size people know they're plus size. Like, it's not like you're like, oh wow, like I had no idea. Like, yeah, it was just like, it was the, you know, you're the first person to bring this up to me, I think is like also. But if it's something that just makes them uncomfortable, if it's something that, you know, ruins the experience, because it's hard to stick with something you don't like doing or feel uncomfortable in. And if something like weight measurements or weigh-ins, especially publicly, which like often the scale at the gym is very like, you know, it's just in the gym somewhere, right? Makes them feel uncomfortable in that environment. Like, we're just making it harder for them to stick with fitness in the first place.
Yeah.
Where like removing those things has just made it like they're more comfortable with training. They like training more. They're able to appreciate the wins they have outside of the weight on the scale, because we're not measuring it. Like, they're getting more energy. They're becoming stronger. Like, they're feeling better about themselves. Like, things like that. Like, we're able to appreciate that more. Whereas if we did like, let's say, weekly weigh-ins or something like that, like, it would be like, well, are you doing a good job? And then you step on the scale, yeah, and you're 2 pounds more than you thought you'd be. You know what I mean? Like, I think like I'm with you. We're like, removing those things have actually really benefited the people that I've worked with.
Yeah. I really think that, you know, I know we don't want to bang on about the scale for too long here, but
fair.
Really feel like there's an unknowing of the lived experience of person in the larger body, and how many times, and we're talking about like throughout elementary school being put on scales, throughout having parents that have sent them to fat camps and taken them to Weight Watchers. Like, there's a lot of trauma around a larger bodied lived experience that is unknowing to people that don't have that lived experience. So I am positive that a trainer's job and their mission is not to re-traumatize people, but I want people to be aware that that might actually be happening when we're asking people to jump on a scale.
I think that's fair, that like they mean well, right? I like to think that like most, especially trainers who've been around for a while, like they have good intentions. You know, we've talked about this before, like off camera, where it's like a lot of, you know, weight loss, fat loss coaches do mean well, like the intent is there, which I think is good. What can, outside of the gym, like let's say a trainer gets someone who is plus size, is there anything that you would ask or change about the program compared to someone else, or something that maybe you would consider in the back of your head that would help make the experience better for them?
In the education that I do with trainers, we talk a lot about an intake and how that can be adjusted. And, cause we want to not assume that every plus size person is a beginner. Like, if I walked into a gym, I wouldn't want to be treated. And I often am. I think a lot of people think it's my first rodeo. If I'm ever at a race, they're like, good for you. You know, there's a lot of like condescending, approaches. And I think that we need to just in the intake really get a snapshot of the person's current situation, but also their past history with fitness and sport, and see where they're at. And then, you know, some people I start seated, Some people I start standing and you doing like basic foundational workouts. And some people I move right to a barbell and we're doing, you know, heavier lifts. But one of the things that I think the biggest thing is that a larger body will move differently. And there's this phrase in the fitness industry, correct form. And the correct form phrase is conducive to a smaller bodied lift experience.
Right.
So when we have a larger body, and particularly when there's like a belly abundance happening of tissue, you know, it's just not going to get into the same positions as somebody that doesn't have that. And so I've seen people like manhandling clients, like, you know, no, you got to do this and you got to move there and you got to, you know, trying to put bodies into position or trying to like reiterate the correct form over and over and over again while that body actually doesn't do it. It won't do it.
So I totally agree. Just so we can get a clear example of it. What's like an exercise you find people are incorrectly correcting in like the training session for plus size people? Like what's the like... Yeah.
I think a deadlift is a difficult exercise for somebody with, you know, an abundance in the front. The hinging is different. The foot position has to be different. And also there's, you know, often a rolling in the back where we want to like make sure that the back is more flat. But yeah, and I would say, even exercises where you're on the floor, say, for example, a dead bug, you know, getting the legs up and the arms up with that abundance can be difficult. But also just thinking about things like, oh, we're just going to warm you up on the bike. Does the saddle fit the buttocks?
Yeah.
You know, like we need to really look at the person's form. And that's why, like, a very trained eye will be able to look at somebody's body as they're walking into their session and think to themselves, okay, so I had that person doing this and that's not going to work. You know, can the person get up and down off the floor? I've been in so many fitness situations where that's assumed.
Right. And I think that that's like, one, it's a very important thing to consider because it's like very embarrassing. Right. Is that like, if you put someone in like a dead bug position and then they can't get up, like that's like an experience that like will definitely hinder someone potentially coming back. Right.
Yeah.
So like even getting them into that position, but like, and you know, as the trainer, like you're supposed to know, like, where is their fitness level at? Like, okay, this person has some more weight to them. So stuff like body weight exercises are going to be more like, just cause there's more to lift, like there's going to be more of a challenge. Like it's kind of like, you know, a person doing a pull-up that is 100 pounds, it's just not the same as someone who's 200 pounds or 300. Like, it's just not the same. Like, it's not the same, you know? And I think, like, that's something to just keep in mind. And as, like, a trainer, like, your job is to be like, okay, I'm working with this person. Like, I need to consider everything about them to make their program properly. And, like, you mentioned the seat. I've heard that for the bike. I've heard that for leg press machines, potentially hack squats, depending on how they're built. Those, and like, you know, if why put someone in that position when there's usually other alternatives, right? Like you can always use
there's a treadmill. All kinds of, yeah.
And you know, as a trainer, like there's always like something else you can do, right? Like if something really doesn't work, you know, like I really like palliative presses. I think those are really accommodating for a lot of people, really of any size, you know, like works for a lot of people. You can do it with bands, cables, you can make it as hard or as easy as you kind of want it to be.
That's funny. I have those in all my programs.
They're great. Yeah. Like, not even just in like the plus size world, but just like in general, like use those.
Yeah, it's a great exercise.
It's funny when you, for people listening, like look it up because it looks easy. It looks like, what are you even doing? And then when you do it properly, it's actually like it can be a very difficult exercise, especially once you start like adding weight or using heavier bands. But when you look at it, you're like, what is this person even doing? Like, what is this like?
You're just and then,
like,
standing there. What's up?
You're just standing there. And then it's like actually like surprisingly hard. So I think that's a great thing to mention as well. What can people... Okay, actually, here's a question I have for you. One question I want to ask that sometimes I'll talk to somebody and they want to get into fitness. And one of the questions that they'll ask is, okay, I want to get into it, but I'm going to get in shape first. Mm-hmm. And then I'll get into fitness. And I hear this a lot. And I think when I first started training, this was like very confusing to me because like the gym is supposed to be the place where you get fit, right? Like, yeah. It's like, you don't need a precursor necessarily. Like, it's like, what do you think of that? And like, how would you have that conversation with that person?
Well, first of all, when somebody says that, and I've had this conversation literally like 1,000 times or more, it's fear. They're fearful to go into a fitness space, and that is warranted in a lot of situations, right? So I think it's more about that. Like, you know, what is going to change for you? And the other thing too is that is a way to prolong the process. People will say, I'm going to get fit before I do that. And that will go on for sometimes years. And, yep. And you know, it never really happens. So I think that to address that, it's actually not a physical thing. It's a psychological thing. And to kind of talk about like, what is the fear of going into the space, and how can we mitigate those fears?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I've kind of come to like the same conclusion that it's not really like about the physical. It's a lot more about like their mindset, what they think the gym is like. Mm-hmm. I think social media has actually made that perception worse. Yeah. Because I think a lot of people picture like what your social media feed shows you is the norm in the gym, which is often like very athletic people lifting crazy amounts of weight with like very, you know, very muscular, low body fat physiques, which is just like not the norm for most gyms. The gyms have like more variety than what's shown on social media. There's still work to be done. But I think when people picture like everyone they see on social media is what's going to be your gym environment, that makes it like an even another level of intimidating, where like a good example is like, if you're a guy and you bench 225 in the gym, you are like in the top, you know, 5% of your gym. Like, that is a no. But if you go online, like, who doesn't bench 2 plates, mm-hmm. 3 plates, 4 plates, looking effortless while also being at 6% body fat, right? Like, it's just mm-hmm. like a very different perception of what the gym is. And sometimes I feel like people need to just get off their phone for a second and go into the gym and actually see what it looks like, because that's not the norm, or at least most gyms I've been to, that's like not the norm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the gym I go to is quite an athletic gym. And I would say on most days I'm the largest person in the room, but it's the environment and the leadership from the owner that I, and the rest of the trainers there that I'm, you don't have to have a bunch of larger bodied people in the room to feel safe and comfortable, as long as you're in the right environment. But I agree. I think so much of this comes down to representation, is that we have created this imagery and this messaging around our fitness culture that is damn intimidating for people.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very important to acknowledge, and also something that I think isn't super obvious if you're already in the fitness space, that like there are people who like, I've done a whole full episode on like how to make the gym less intimidating, because that is something that like people are just afraid to get started in the first place. It's a very open space. And if you're new to fitness, like you don't really want all eyes on you, and it can feel like that. Like, and I think that's something that's definitely worth acknowledging, because I think if you're already in the fitness world, you're like, what are you talking about? Like, everyone's nice and like supportive. Yes. And like, yeah, that's your experience. That is your experience. But I think for many people who are, they don't have like, let's call it the fitness look to them. You know, putting quotation marks for anyone who's listening. And then for, you know, they don't have that look, you know, they're new to the gym, they don't feel strong, they don't feel athletic. And then all these other people around them are lifting weights that they can't even perceive them as doing ever in the future, that like, that's an intimidating environment, you know, like that's yeah. the, I would say like gyms also tend to lean younger in many cases, not always. Gyms are kind of work.
Sorry, yeah, their imagery and their representation is definitely, you know, that was another kind of beef I had with the 10 gyms that I looked at. It was very young and very able-bodied and very lean.
Yeah, I've noticed that in the imagery too. Like the average person on their website is like 23 or like, you know, something along those lines. And then like I work with a lot of people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, like all who can lift, all who are getting stronger. But they don't necessarily see themselves in like the marketing, right? Or like if they go to a gym, very often they are one of the oldest, if not the oldest person, kind of depending on the gym environment. And that is kind of like another thing that like you kind of have to, and like you kind of, you said, representation matters. Like people are going to be more comfortable in environments that they see themselves in, right? Like that's like, it's hard to be the lone wolf in an environment, right? Like a lot of people feel more comfortable when other people like them are there. If that makes sense.
Yes. So. And that's why, you know, just to swing back to, you know, I've approached different brands and companies, and I'll talk about one specific brand, which I will not name, but it is like a international world brand that everybody in the fitness industry knows. And I approached them to see if they were interested in doing some education and consulting around the way that they were presenting their equipment. Because it was so ripped and so lean, and this particular piece of equipment I've used for years with larger bodied people, and they were like, we prefer to use fit people.
That was their wording.
That was their wording. We prefer to use fit people. And I was like, okay, there's so much wrapped up in that one statement, because again, we come back to that. What is fit and what does it look like? And It's if you look this way, you're not fit. And if you look this way, you are fit. And we're certainly not going to align with something that looks unfit, because that will ruin our image of our product. Even though millions of people of average body size and larger body size are using that equipment, they remain invisible.
And can be very athletic, I think, as well. Like people say, like, look like an athlete. I mean, I don't know about you, like look at the US Olympic team. That's like a lot more diverse of a group than you think it is. Like, and those are Olympians. Okay. Yep. Like the shot putter does not look like the track and field athlete, which does not look like, and these are like, if they're not athletes, I don't know who, like, you know what I mean? Like, so the idea that fit has like a look to it, I think is just like, the more you dive into it, the more like wrong it is.
Yes.
And I think like that's something that we need to work on as well. You don't need to say the company name. I have like theories. I'm going to ask you off camera, but I have like theories on it, but yeah, you don't have to do that here. If someone is plus size and they're intimidated by the gym, other than like the gyms changing themselves, do you have advice for someone to kind of how can they be of what they can control? What can they do to feel more comfortable in the gym environment?
Well, I think one of the things is do your homework before you go. So just kind of know what you're stepping into. And I think that if you can find gyms that have even just a slight inclusive edge to it, then that's going to probably make your experience better. But also feel the right to advocate for yourself while you're there. If you're not getting the modifications that you need or the adaptations or something's not working for you. And the other thing I hear so often from people of all shapes and sizes is they go into gyms and they have no idea how to use the equipment. Like they don't know how to put together a program for themselves or even what to do with the equipment. So you have every right to ask for a tour and to be introduced and see if the gym can accommodate that. So just really showing up for yourself, because once you get up to speed on what to do and how to do it, then you'll feel more confident in your situation.
Yeah, that's one thing. I totally agree with everything you've said. That's like one thing I've always advocated for as well, is like when you jump into the gym, you don't know how anything works yet. And like, but that's fine because you're new, and that like, even if you can get to like the fourth workout, and you have some kind of plan, doesn't even need to be like a good plan, it gets better. And I think a lot of people, you see this all the time in January, where it's a lot of New Year's resolutioners, right? Like they're very excited, motivated. They get into the gym. It's very intimidating, more intimidating than they hope it would be. There's all these machines they don't know how to use, and they're worried they're going to look dumb using them. And I can see why, you know, you do your first workout, maybe you do your second one, and then by February, you've like never gone back to the gym. And I think kind of what you mentioned, like, can we get someone just to teach someone how to use the machines at like a minimum, or how to use certain how to do like some basic movement exercises, like just like, what does a squat exercise look like, or a dead, like not, it, you know, doesn't have to be a full program, but even if we can just teach them some like basic core movements, and then like that's something they can do in the gym and feel more comfortable in the gym. I think that goes a long way really for everybody. Like, I think like that's like, I wish there was more, I guess, like equipment tours. I don't know what you would call it, but like kind of like an intro to the gym, I think would go a long way.
I mean, it would serve the gym, right? Like, it would have more longevity in the clientele. I mean, this is what I try to tell gyms when I'm speaking with them, is this is actually will benefit your bottom line. I mean, if I can't get them to, you know, be more inclusive just based on the goodness of humanity, I talk about dollars, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, talk their language. Yeah. You know, like, I think that that's the, if you can do both, that's great. Like, if you can do both, but like, you know, I've also had conversations with like gym, and like, if you can turn it into a dollars conversation, like, it tends, they, you know, ears perk up over like, you should do this for like being morally right or anything. Yeah. Along, you know, like, it tends to, you know, you might get a sympathetic email, but you're not going to get much of their interest, because that's just like not how it works.
It just makes business sense. It's, and you know, inclusivity on every level is the way of the future. And so if you're not already playing that game and talking that talk, you're already behind the ball.
I think, yeah. And I think like the fitness world in general is kind of behind the ball on this one. I am one of the few weight neutral trainers I know in the online space, both like, and in person, to be honest. In person is even rarer. Like, I think I'm trying to think, I know less than 10, I would say, weight neutral trainer. And I've been around for years. Like, I've been around for like, it's not like I've, you know, and then again, like in person gyms, like, is there a weight neutral coach? Like, any of them, or even like a weight neutral option? Like, just, you know, it's, fitness is behind the ball on this one. I think we're going to get there, but I think it's going to take a while. And kind of like what you said is that like, this is the way of the future. Like, this is like, this is not going anywhere. We're including more and more people, which is good, which is great. We love that. And that, like, the more that we can include people into fitness, the more people who are exercising, getting stronger, healthier, like, it's a good thing to do, and it's going to benefit us all in the long run.
Yeah, it definitely is the way of the future. And I think the way that we're going to change the fitness culture and the fitness industry is by how we certify fitness professionals. And so I've already created these partnerships with ACE and NASM and AFAA, and this is where it's going. So I think that as organizations, people should really look at, how inclusive are we being? How much representation do we have on our website? How much retention do we have of larger bodied people? What does our social media look like?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of like all the things that you offer, I would love to hear, because you offer, I deep diving into your stuff, you actually offer a lot of things. So I would love to learn about, like, if people want to work with you, or if people want to learn more about being size inclusive, like, what of the things you offer, like, would you recommend they check out?
If you're a fitness professional or a wellness professional of any kind, I do offer a size inclusive fitness specialist certification, and that is accredited with ACE, NASM, AFAA. Plus, we write letters for all kinds of governing bodies, and they get accredited as well. And that's a 15-hour course that's dedicated to working with larger body people in an effective way. And so that's done through the Size Inclusive Training Academy. And then as a coach, I do coaching programs. I do Learn to Run programs. I do a weightlifting program called Size Strong. I do one-on-one coaching online as well. I have a fitness app that's on Google and Apple and Roku.
Awesome. Great. I'll let everyone know about that. I'm also going to put like your Instagram in the show notes so people know where to find you, and they can, like, through your link, find out all the information. Luis, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Is there anything else that you want to share before we finish off here?
No, just great to chat with somebody very like-minded.
No, it's a pleasure. Yeah, I think I followed you for a while. I think you followed me for a while as well. So I'm glad that we actually like made this work. And no, I appreciate what you do because it's very unique, but very needed.
Yeah, thank you so much.
No worries. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Badass Lifter Podcast.